Hello and welcome to the Interior Design Business. My name is Jeff Hayward and I'm here with my co-presenter, Susie Rumbold, past president of the British Institute of Interior Design and creative director of Tessuto Interiors, to discuss how interior designers are dealing with challenging times.
The Chinese have a traditional curse which runs, "May you live in interesting times," by which they mean troubled times. And I think we'd all agree that the recent times have been very interesting indeed. The global economy is on its knees, intractable foreign conflicts send ripples of concern across the planet, and geopolitical ructions lead to trade wars and the mass migration of entire populations. But does any of this impact the cozy world of interior design? Is this turmoil having a detrimental effect on our international and domestic clients, both at home and abroad? And if so, can interior designers do anything to protect themselves from the chill winds of change? Welcome to the Interior Design Business.
Now, today we are joined by international design duo Nicole Salverson and Mary Graham, founders and co-directors of Salverson Graham, to find out how they are continuing to thrive against the odds.
Before we begin, could you tell us a little bit about you, yourselves, and your backgrounds in interior design?
We work on projects, mainly residential, some commercial, but always with a residential look to it, in the UK and abroad. And actually, increasingly, are finding a lot of our clients are foreign, whether that's abroad or in the UK, and really known for a sort of quite a classic English style, but hopefully making it more relevant to not only the aesthetic of today, but also the way people live today, which I think is the big difference.
Absolutely.
And what is it about the UK that makes it such an appealing place to live for foreign nationals, Nicole?
I think they like that authentic nature of the British people as well as the place. The honesty that comes with that. So I think they do tend to come here because they're wanting to seek out that culture, and not coming here as an investment piece or anything like that. They want to experience the culture. So a lot of them, they might have a pied-à-terre here, or we have families that are moving here because they just want to experience it and they're not necessarily coming.
And schooling, I think, is a big part of it. A lot of our clients, particularly Americans, are very keen on educating their children here. And I think as well, from talking to both, we have mainly American clients and European. We tend to have, as British people, I think, quite a negative perception of the UK. And I think we're relentlessly bombarded with quite negative press about our country. And it's really interesting when you take a step back and talk to foreign clients who all, view it in a much more positive light. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that is really refreshing for us as well, actually, to always hear the positivity from our clients. You know, we have clients that have lived in Paris, New York, the Far East, and almost all of them, I would say, without fail, say their favourite place to live is the UK.
It has that much broader appeal. Mm. It's not just a city-based move.
Interesting. So back in the noughties, it seemed as though there was literally a never-ending stream of foreign billionaires beating a path to our shores. Is that still the case, or has the supply kind of dried up?
I think it's changed in terms of what they want. You know, there used to be a very historic, not historic, but, you know, there was a move that you're talking about that was, I'm sure, for the slick, minimalist, and Mayfair apartment, and that's what they were looking for. We are finding, because that isn't what we do, you know, we tend to do, much more architecturally interesting, Georgian properties in London or elsewhere. And I think actually we're finding that those clients that once would have veered towards an apartment that was more contemporary, they actually want that more traditional, cozy, like you were alluding to, sort of cozy English interior. And actually, that is what has changed quite a lot.
I would say the kind of Middle Eastern and Russian market obviously has completely changed. So anyone whose business was solely catering to that need, you know, I'd be interested to know how
they're in trouble.
To that. We've been lucky, like Nicole says, our aesthetic never really appealed to that market. So we're much more North American and European. And we haven't found, I don't think, that they have stopped having an interest in purchasing in the UK.
Because so, the other way.
In fact, the other way, yeah. We think speak for our own business, but actually it's been really good. And the type of people wanting to buy property, say, are the type of people that like our aesthetic.
And for a long time, exceptionally low interest rates have been the thing. Yeah. But yeah, how is it changing? How is that impacting your business?
A client tends to come to us that has already decided that they're okay with everything that's going on. So by the time someone comes to us, they accept that they're going to have to pay higher rates for certain aspects of their project. Or the very nature of being able to, for foreign nationals, being able to buy a property here that they're not so affected, because going back to that point made earlier, they're not doing it necessarily for an investment. Mm-hmm. It's more of it's a home. They're creating this space for themselves here in a place that they absolutely love. So I think the nature of a client of ours is that they are doing that. I mean, definitely taxes, VAT, those sorts of things become a more important conversation, but the US clients have become more aware of it. It doesn't necessarily become a factor for whether they're going to move forward if we're being interviewed by a client, whether they're going to move forward with, for a project or not. But I think certainly for an American client, they are already having to employ someone that's out of state or in a different place.
And what about domestic clients? Are they must have been adversely impacted. So talk to us a bit about that.
It's not so much that they necessarily want to spend less or cut corners, but goalposts shift mid-project in a way that they never used to. Kind of 5 years ago, you signed up for a project, you knew what it was going to cost. It was quite clear for everyone, and maybe the time frames were the thing that might move or slip. But now you can definitely be in a project and the government suddenly makes an announcement about school fees or something like that. And that can have a massive impact.
And with the election uncertainty over the last few years, you've definitely noticed people stall and say, maybe we'll just wait a couple of months to make that key decision. And you can tell it's not a key decision to buy a certain piece, but, you know, I'm just going to hold off on not pushing the architect to get the plans in.
Yeah, people are chasing less, hounding less, because actually they're quite enjoying the breathing space of having to wait for someone to get back to them.
Yeah.
But I think it's less about what people are going to spend a project, but it's maybe if they want to phase something or the time something's going to take, or they say we're going to pause for 6 months and do that, which is hard for a business, obviously, if you've allocated a team of staff to work on a project and someone says we're going to pause, you know. So we've definitely learnt that we have to be quite nimble and adaptable, fill any downtime by focusing on the product arm of our business, which was one of the reasons why we set that up, so that you've got more flexibility with ebb and flow of the client side of life. Yeah, I think people are relatively resilient, and it's just about adapting and maybe running projects in slightly different ways.
I think the industry has changed quite a lot. I think those clients that historically, and we're very much our bread and butter of clients, you know, a few years ago, beautiful Queen Anne at home in the country that everyone wanted and is still so desirable, was brilliant. But actually the build cost that you were finding 5 years ago is completely different now. It's doubled. They have also become squeezed, that client who used to have a very generous budget for their project. Now it isn't. It's not possible. So I think that part of the market has changed.
Suffered
a huge amount. But also you have to think about your profit margins, and you have to think about where you... So I think in terms of just being able to roll with the punches of moving clients and projects and how that works, you just have to really think about what is the way for us to be most efficient here.
You've got to understand your business. It's not just about the clients and projects. It's about what you as a business also need, and hopefully trying to kind of dovetail those two things together.
So would you say that foreign clients prefer traditional British style interiors? And if so, what is the attraction?
I think they definitely do, or those that come to us do, because it's what we're offering them. There's definitely a uniqueness to the British style, which is quite hard to identify what it is. But I think people know it is a unique quality, and that's sort of what they want. And we always say, you know, if Americans try to replicate it, it just doesn't work, doesn't hit quite the right note. And I think a lot of that, as we touched on earlier, comes with history and... Mm-hmm. The sense of layering things from different periods, which we're lucky to be able to do because most of the houses we work in are already, you know, at least 200 years
old. By the nature of us just being so much more used to living and existing in older homes.
We're already used to that layering of periods on top of each other. I think also the comfort that is synonymous with an English interior is quite different to other countries. And we definitely find we tailor that. So most of our American clients who want a British look want it a bit cleaner and a bit tidier than a British look. Yeah. So we sort of say, you know, for an English client, we'd have the dog on the sofa. Yes, but for an American, they'd have a nice dog bed that they went into.
We always joke about, you know, that a typical English interior is, you know, it has to be sort of hard wearing, because you do, you know, you come in with your wellies and you sit on the sofa. So we've sort of taken that typical layered British interior that you did, you know, what you imagine in a big country house, and then we've tailored it, and that's what's fresher and, you know, and feels like a new way of English design. So I think that has been an interesting point. So I think it's that we're not afraid though to be a bit messier, you know, so we can add that layering to what the American clients, and this is their feedback from what they're seeing. It's obviously also what we see in, of, you know, of decorators that we hugely admire, but that what is the difference, you know, and it is just that extra little bit of layering, throwing something in that's knocking it off a little bit. We're not afraid to do that, and I think that's what
makes the Americans particularly have a decorating culture, which actually we love, of a lot of symmetry. Everything's quite perfect, which doesn't work with the English style. So I think they sort of want elements of that, but they want it thrown off and done with an English eye. So they're big on case goods in America in a way that we would really never use case goods here. You know, we always do individual pieces or antiques. And as much as antiques are obviously available in the States at a hugely inflated price, it's stuff that we could get round the corner here for sort of £200 or like $2,000 there. But I think it's the ease and familiarity we have with that kind of furniture that is new and different for Americans, and I think that's what they like, the ease with which we can mix in antiques or different furnitures from different styles in the same scheme.
I think in typical English interior as well feels quite grown up, and we have a lot of younger clients, you know, it's often our clients are in their sort of early mid 30s, and they're coming to us and saying, we want this house to feel authentic and to feel grown up and not to feel that we don't know what we're doing, you know, so please can you bring that to the party. And that almost is the same, and it's not, you know, I don't mean this in patronize, but when an international client comes to the UK, you know, they're saying, I need to feel like, you know, I want this home to feel like I've just, you know, it's authentic. And again, when we're doing projects in the US too, so
less perhaps of, I want it to be like the interior of Downton Abbey or the Crown.
Yeah. They want a bit of that, yes, but in a way that they're going to be comfortable living in.
Yeah.
Because it's all, and actually, you know, what makes Alves and Graham more appealing than some other practices, I suppose, is the other thing, you know, is we do that in a very unpretentious way, you know. And I think when an international client or a younger client or any client comes to go to do this process, you know, whether it's the first time or when they've done it many times before, they want to feel comfortable and they want to feel looked after by whoever's doing their home for them. And I think sometimes they can feel a bit intimidated by the sort of Britishness.
Grandees.
Exactly.
And also, you know, how dare you have the audacity to ask for an English interior when you're buying a new build in, you know, Bermondsey. Whereas we'll think, great, how are we going to make this work? Yeah. You know, this is a challenge. Yeah.
So I'm interested in that younger demographic. What do you think the English aesthetic means to that demographic?
I think it's harking back to their youth, isn't it? You know, they want the homes that their grandparents had or that they used to visit. And I think that very much, you know, I think it was happening before COVID. I don't think it was just a COVID
that exacerbated,
you know,
it.
And actually perhaps the way we all reacted to COVID was because of it. You know, they want to feel warm and cozy and welcomed. They don't want, you know, I always likened it to watching you know, Succession, and the youth in that television program had these sort of really stark, modern, contemporary apartments. I don't think that's actually what they want anymore. You know, I think they do want to still feel protected and welcomed by their home and cozy. And
nostalgia has such an important part to play, I think, in interiors. And, you know, when you think about that demographic of client now, their grand, you know, what were they surrounded by when they were growing up, or their grandparents' generation? It was the 60s, 70s, 80s. It was Liberty print. It was blousy florals, you know, and that's what we're finding they're wanting now. Again, probably in a slightly more pared back, tailored version, because that look also needs to sit alongside modern technology and all, you know, kitchens that can do all sorts of wonderful things. So it's not pastiche, and you're not completely saying let's recreate your granny's, you know, floral Barbara Cartland bedroom, but we're saying, well, let's take, if you love that chintz, you know, let's use that, but do it with a nice sludgy green and, you know, sophisticated colours and nice antiques and things like that. But yeah, definitely, I think it is, it's nostalgia and comfort and security.
And we've become a lot less, you know, I don't think, you know, we're not pretentious as people. We're just never going to be like that. But I think we've also become a lot more laid back as the years have gone past. I actually, we feel probably quite proud that our, the way we design hasn't changed hugely. You know, we go back to projects when we first started Salves and Graham, and they still feel really relevant now and not far off how we would have done that scheme now. But equally, I think that we certainly have, you know, taken the knocks and are happy to listen to, you know, what client want, what a client wants. So, you know, that those, we're just a bit more relaxed about it. And I think that that really comes through in the way you design and the way you treat a client. We like a really open dialogue. We like to hear how they, you know, we don't want them to ever be afraid of telling us.
And often they know what they want. They just lack the confidence to say it or realize it. So sometimes it's about teasing out of them what's already there, you know, what they already know, and that can be a really enjoyable and sort of satisfying process.
Yes, and I'm sure you find that they advance in confidence as the project goes
on. Well, I was just about to make the point actually that you need to teach them, you know, you need to, in the same way that we've learned, you know, and grown in confidence, and you know, we're really upfront with the, our communication with clients, whether it comes to finance or the aesthetic. You know, they come to us and say, do you want, you know, we really love this chair and we really want to use it. We will try our absolute hardest to, but we will also be totally honest if it's just never going to work. It is our job to try and make it work, and we're not going to be snobby about something like that. But actually, you know, we need to teach them what is going to work and what, you know, is something, a takeaway, not that they can go and do it themselves
and make it fun for them. You know, exactly, it's a bit like a process. Child, we love it at the end of the project when you feel like you're setting them off on their way in this nice house and with the confidence to then layer it and add to it themselves. We had one client that we started in COVID, and she was American, and we were doing a place in London for very, wanted very much neutral things, quite, you know, safe. And by the end of it, you know, she was all about the colour and the pattern, and would bring us up and say, look at this thing that I just saw. I thought you'd be so proud of me. And it's so lovely to take someone on that journey gently. So you're not forcing them, but they're discovering something within themselves that they probably just hadn't been exposed to before. And that's why they didn't like it.
The confidence to express their own taste.
Exactly. Yes, and it's really, yeah, I think there's a real privilege to be able to do that.
Are foreign clients at all interested in making their projects sustainable?
I think we used to ask our clients, you know, I think it was always on that, you know, questionnaire that everyone had at the beginning, which we still have it, but it's been adjusted hugely. We used to ask a client, are you interested in sustainability, and is that important to you? Now it's not a question for them. It's about us and us as a business, that actually we are interested in that and that's important to us, and making sure that the decisions we're making are going to help them be sustainable in their lives. Because, you know, it's, if a client's not interested in that, we can't ignore it. So I think that's,
so it has to come from us. But I mean, to your question, sadly, I don't think it's high on many clients' priority list, English or foreign. I think cost is still, I would say, the driving force, and speed.
Yes, and actually going back to a lot of what we were talking about earlier and people spending money, and even if they're not worried about what they're spending, I still think value for money is so important. And people want to know that the choices they're making have an even greater value for money. So it's not about, not in terms of an investment, just that it's worth it. And a lot of that comes actually back to the sustainability point of just really good manufacture. That something is made beautifully. Quality is the most important.
And actually, I do think on the sustainability angle, less so, I think they're still less concerned about where something comes from or how it's made. But in terms of that desire to rip everything out immediately, which in the 90s, I think you just assume the kitchen will go, the bathrooms will go, you know, obviously. I think people are more interested in trying to reuse things like that now. And certainly for us, with loving antiques, that's a great way to be sustainable straight away, you know, by using something that was made in the past. So there are definitely ways that it can be quite easy to encourage the client to be sustainable, but I think there's still quite a long way to go before sustainability trumps price.
I mean, isn't, in a way, actually, in that, to the point that I was saying, you know, of projects that we've done a long time ago feel still feeling current now, in a way, hopefully, and I'm not, you know, greenwashing or pretending that we're, you know, that everything we do is the most sustainable it can be, but the way that we design that is timeless in its nature, and that you're not designing something that someone's going to be bored of in 5 years.
That's sustainable in itself.
You know, and clients come to us because even if they're someone that's going to need to move in 5 years' time or less, or, you know, a bit more, we often do projects for clients that it is their forever home, and we're designing for a next generation. You know, so actually, the nature of that way of creating an interior is always going to have that longevity.
And this English style is inherently quite a sustainable style of decorating. So that's another reason, you know, why we love it and why I think it's so popular now as well. The notion of reusing and layering is actually very sustainable.
If it looks a bit grubby, it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. All the better.
That's what French polisher is. I know, exactly. I do. Love a French polisher.
What would be your one piece of advice for working on overseas projects?
Well, my one is about being strict with site visits. And this is more if you're doing a project overseas rather than a foreign client here. I think they have chosen to employ you, so you don't need to feel guilty about the fact that you're not present all the time, and you don't need to drop everything to go there. You know, it's the client's choice to employ someone that's not based where the property is. So I think you need to just be quite strict and disciplined about that and make the rest of the team, you know, work towards your schedule.
I mean, I think, yes, that was certainly one of the thoughts that springs to mind with that question. I think essentially you need to make sure you're creating the same thing that you create here. Sometimes a client thinks that because you're working internationally, they can do it slightly differently. And you need to be clear about the parameters of what your responsibilities are. And therefore, there still needs to be a really good architect in the same way that it would be here, and a really good builder. And everyone still needs to communicate in the same way. And often clients don't go into it necessarily thinking that. So that has to be explained. But yes, you know, definitely setting the boundaries at the beginning, what it's going to cost, what the taxes are going to look like.
And also, you know, fabrics will cost them, everything will cost them more, but that was their choice. And I think, again, maybe it's a British thing, maybe it's a female thing. You often feel, gosh, but, you know, they're going to have to pay this much for import duties.
That's not your fault.
Exactly. Well, setting those parameters at the beginning of where do you want things to come from? Because if it's a project, I mean, often an American client in the US is employing you because they are going to want to buy most things from the UK anyway. Because actually it's, you know, it gets talked about so much. It's so much cheaper to make things here than it is in the US, and you're getting that quality. I think it's moving a little bit, and by the time, you know, and obviously taxes involved, but equally, a lot of when we spend time in the US and we talk to US decorators, they're all buying everything from the Pimlico Road as well. So we always say,
give us some tips about some great suppliers. And they're like, well, there's Robert Klein, Sham. And we're like, yeah, we know all of these guys. Most American clients would expect, I would say, at least 50% to come from the UK anyway.
So it's setting those parameters. Who's going to be making, where do you want your kitchen made? Do you want it? In Europe, they often do want it here, made here. Obviously, you're not going to ship something. Well, you know, but we would definitely recommend not shipping something to the US from the UK if we can set in a kitchen or something like that. But, you know, where's that all going to be made? And then setting that at the beginning, it's all agreed, because that obviously then you're taking into account the tax elements as well.
What is next for Selvson Graham?
Well, very exciting. We've got a book coming out very soon, available for pre-orders and coming out early May. And that has been an absolute labour of love. And you know, getting it out there has been both terrifying and exciting in equal measures, but we're really, really thrilled with it.
Yeah. And it's very much, all projects of ours. And then in between the projects is a sort of deep dive into things that are important to us, like antiques, layering, working with colour. Yeah.
Going back to that idea of also, you know, how we teach our clients and how we get them involved in feeling passionate about things we're passionate about. So we took that through to the book and done.
Well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful listening to you this afternoon. Thank you very much for sharing those stories with us.
Thank you for coming. We've all talked for rather a lot, but thank you.
We do hope you've enjoyed this episode, and please do get in touch on our social channels at Interior Design Business Pod. If you have any suggestions or would like us to talk some more about some other designers, the Interior Design Business is a Wildwood Plus production.